The West Live. The West Live. With Jenna Clark.
Joining me this morning is the Minister for Child Protection here in WA, Simone McGuirk. This morning, the government have made a brand new announcement of over $700,000 to help trial Aboriginal family-led decision-making when it comes to children in care. And she joins me now. Good morning, Minister. What can you tell us about this new funding that will be allocated to Aboriginal families?
Hi, Jenna. Great to be with you. The announcement we've made this morning is allocated some money to trial a new involvement of Aboriginal families as well as their community sector organisations, Aboriginal-led community sector organisations, mm-hmm. to be involved in the child protection issues. So this is sort of the planning and decision-making, particularly around placement of Aboriginal children. Essentially, what happens now is that, Aboriginal children are vastly overrepresented in our child protection systems. So yes. I think they're about 3% of our population, Aboriginal people, but about 56% of our children in child protection in care of the department are Aboriginal. So we've currently got some changes through working through the Parliament, some changes to the child protection legislation, which would involve represent increased involvement of Aboriginal organisations in placement decisions. But this trial around a model called Aboriginal family-led decision-making takes that a step further and would actually mean, a representation of self-determination for Aboriginal people in regard to child protection. Child safety is at the safety of any is at the centre of any decision, so that's not compromised. That's the sort of benchmark of whether a child should or shouldn't be taken into care isn't altered, but it's really who is involved in that decision and how we involve the broader family, the Aboriginal community and Aboriginal organisations to participate in that decision-making. And the money we've allocated is for a trial around Aboriginal family-led decision-making.
So the trial is for about 2 years with a plan to potentially kick it on further, just a little bit over $700,000. It doesn't seem like a lot of money, but I guess how will this roll out in reality? What will be the changes that people will see on the ground?
Well, we'll commission some, and we've already actually begun doing this anyway. This just adds a bit of extra new money into the system. But we'll commission some Aboriginal experts to help us work through what that model might be, and probably more than one area. Mm-hmm. So it might be that we do some planning around children, babies that would have come into care. What's the decision making around that?
Sure.
And what's the sort of supports in place, either for keeping the baby with the mother, with the birth family, or if it is to go to another family, what's the kind of cultural supports and connection of that baby and the carers with the broader family and Aboriginal community and culture. The Royal Commission into Child Sex Abuse found that for Aboriginal children, identity to culture was an important protective factor for those children. So the changes in the legislation as well as family-led decision-making trial is all recognising that we have to do better. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. We have to do better, and we will not improve the outcomes with Aboriginal children without the involvement of Aboriginal leaders and Aboriginal community and strengthening the identity and connection to culture and country for Aboriginal kids.
Absolutely. And I guess a lot of groups have been calling for this for quite some time. And I know that you have been quite vocal about this, specifically in Parliament, saying that there were some changes coming and Aboriginal people have always been involved in this sort of decision making. But I guess it just sort of solidifies it and just to see how it goes. How will these certain Aboriginal experts be chosen to take part?
Well, we'll do that in conjunction with Aboriginal groups. So there are a couple of structures now in place in different parts of the state where we can consult with Aboriginal people involved in the child protection systems and services that are involved and talk to them about who would be appropriate. So they'll be consulted in that model. We already have a form of family-led decision-making, Aboriginal family-led decision-making in some of our early intervention contracts. So people might be familiar with Wanganjing, which is the old Aboriginal Drug and Alcohol Authority. That that leads a consortium which is doing some early intervention work with Aboriginal families. And early days, but the results are looking quite promising of keeping children safe, but also keeping giving those families some assistance to get on top of their issues and to stay stable and happy and healthy, mm-hmm. which is what we want. So we've already got a form of that already existing in our early intervention work. Aboriginal family-led decision-making is already in place in Victoria and Queensland, but interestingly, they're slightly different models. Right. So we'll have a look at, we'll work with Aboriginal groups to look at those different models and decide what's best for WA in agreement with them.
And I guess
the idea about the trial is that we try different things and then evaluate it. And if it's working, of course, we'd love to extend it out.
Yeah.
If not, we'll reset and...
That's the thing, I guess, with this sort of any type of community-led response, because there are so many Indigenous communities in Western Australia. Something that is right for, say, up in the Kimberley is not going to suit, say, the community down in the southwest. So I guess it's an interesting time just to see what works, and it won't be a one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly, and that's been one of the challenges for Western Australia is the size of our state, state and the number of different language groups. Mm. And I think the maturity of Aboriginal organisations throughout the state to take on some of this work, and that's no criticism at all. We as a government system and as a state, we haven't really invested in the development of those organisations. Mm-hmm. And when I was over in Queensland, that's what the Aboriginal... the head of the Aboriginal organisations there said, look, we took the better part of 10 years to develop up the kind of infrastructure of Aboriginal organisations to help partner with us, to help support them develop, so that they've obviously got the cultural authority and the cultural knowledge, but they also understood some of the other considerations that need to be sort of centre of thinking with when you're talking about child safety.
For sure.
So we're absolutely committed to doing that. We've just got to make sure the structures are in place and that we evaluate what we do. We don't just sort of go on hunches or just go on a wing and a prayer. We actually have to evaluate what we're doing. Is this better than what we're doing now? Is this an improvement? And as I said, if it is, then we're absolutely committed to extending it out.
That's fantastic. Well, I look forward to hearing how that goes. I guess from one childcare issue to another, we've had the Grattan Institute come out today saying that the government should increase the subsidy for childcare to 60% for families, bringing fees down to something like $20 a day, because it's going to add something like $5 billion into the economy. What's your take on that? As I guess you're also the Women's Interest Minister as well.
Yeah, that's right. It is a big issue. We, as Women's Interest Minister and also the state government regulates childcare. So we have a lot of involvement with individual centres in that regard to make sure they're safe and they're operating according to their regulations. Well, as many have observed, the pandemic has shown us that when we really need to, we can change things quite radically and quite quickly. And this is a great opportunity for the Australian community and the federal government to have a look at this issue. There's no doubt about it that availability, proximity and affordability. So childcare needs to be sort of close by and sort of readily available in geographic terms, but also affordable for families to really access it. And time and again, it's shown to be the biggest barrier to increasing women's involvement in the workforce. Mm. And so, I mean, it'd be fantastic if we could look at a radical rethink of this. At the moment, we've got education that is, you know, universally available, universal access is essentially free for all families. But that's not the case with childcare. And it's not only important for women's participation in the workforce and to have choice, it wouldn't be mandated, of course, it's still about choice, but it's also very important for child development. It gives real opportunities for capturing some challenges that we've got in the early years, particularly with vulnerable families, and we were just talking about those vulnerable communities before.
Absolutely.
So an ability to link in with services to make sure health checks are done, all those sorts of things, but also the kind of connection, the language development, all those that neural development that occurs in the early years. Time and time again, we hear that investment in those early years will pay dividends through the lifetime, and we struggle to do that. But availability of childcare would be the single biggest boost to that. So, of course, I would welcome a complete rethink of that by the federal government. And this is not just a sort of worthy idea of saying, oh, we want women to work, wouldn't that be a great thing?
Mm.
You know, the studies have shown that this would also pay dividends economically,
yeah.
That we are untapped when it comes to, we're undercooked when it comes to accessing the resources that are women in our community, and giving people choice in their career paths and in what sort of work that they undertake, and then to get the economic benefits, and I think, frankly, so many social benefits as well if we were to make that available.
Yeah, absolutely. And I incorrectly stated before, it wouldn't add just an extra $5 billion. If the Feds tipped in an extra $5 billion, that would see an extra $11
billion
floating
billion,
through the economy, which is fantastic. I guess if this all goes ahead and they do heed the call to basically take a massive rethink of it, will childcare for you be a bit of an election platform moving forward into March next year for you?
Well, the issue is for the state government that we regulate it. So we oversee the adherence to, you know, safety guidelines, ratios of carers and the like. But the federal government funds the childcare system. So this really is a choice for the federal government at the moment. And it was an issue in the last federal election. There was a lot of issues in the last federal election, but there were various commitments by both parties. I know Labor made a big commitment in terms of lowering the income threshold where a childcare would be essentially free for families. But there was a lot of issues in that federal election. It didn't get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So, I think just tinkering, well, making some adjustments can have unintended consequences. So what was happening in the last injection during COVID, when there was JobKeeper, which I support being kept into childcare, but also they reduced the subsidy, the childcare benefit going in, is that childcare centres were then sort of challenged, because even though they had free childcare, they had full access of their services, they were in full demand, but they weren't getting full income
because
they weren't able to charge the families.
Yeah.
So it was great for families, but I know the centres, which are obviously many times operating on a very thin margin, the community-based and some of the privates as well, they were really struggling. And so local government provides a bit of some of the childcare offerings, and they weren't able to access JobKeeper. So when you operate, when you make those quick changes, they are fantastic, but we've seen again with COVID that it can have unintended consequences.
Mm.
What's being proposed here is a complete rethink, but a fundamental investment in untapping the huge resource that is women in our workforce, but also investment in the early years, which would pay dividends for lifetimes and generations, frankly.
Absolutely. I think if COVID has really given us anything, it's the fact that we now have to have a massive overhaul of things like early childhood and also aged care, which are all controlled by the feds, but I guess sort of regulated by the state. So maybe it is a wider conversation around if the state should maybe take back ownership of the things that operate inside Western Australia. But Simone McGuirk, Women's Interest Minister and Child Protection Minister, thank you so very much for your time on The West Live. We'll chat to you again soon.
Thanks, Jenna.